Welcome to Model Minority Moms, where we talk about the meaning of success in career, family, and life. We are Jeanette Park,
Kate Wong,
and Susan Liu,
Harvard classmates and Asian American working moms who get real about the pressures of fitting in while standing out.
Greetings, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Model Minority Moms. Today we are talking about, can you ever be too enriched? We're talking about enrichment programs that we had access to growing up, what we wanted for our kids, how it started, how it's going, and dot, 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 what are our thoughts on it now? Because who doesn't want to give our child the best and to see maybe they're the next Bobby Fischer? Maybe they're going to be the next Indian kid who always wins the spelling bee. And any sign of interest in this? All right, let's start piano lessons. You're two? You can't move your thumbs in the... I don't care. I know we all know the tiger mom. And then we're always like, no, no, no. I'm the cool mom. I'm like, that tiger's in me, but I'm not tiger anymore. But maybe you actually are. So let's own up to it. Okay, so let's go around. I want to understand, when you were a kid, what kind of enrichment programs did you have access to? What was that situation like? Did your parents just give it to you? You never had any? Tell me all about it. Who wants to go first?
I can go first because I had like no enrichment program. I mean, there's not much to say. Like, you know, I came to the U.S. when I was almost six. Parents were really poor graduate students. And my enrichment program was just a lot of reading at the public library by myself. You know how they used to have those like accelerated reader points? So like if you gotten certain points, I think at one point it was like you could trade it in for a personal pan pizza at Pizza Hut. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that personal pan pizza.
Oh my gosh, because we were too poor to like go eat at Pizza Hut regularly. So I just read a lot. That was my enrichment, really. My parents never really sent me to any camps. I started taking piano lessons really late, like in fourth grade.
I love how you call that late.
No, that is relatively, right? Like relative to all the other people that I know who usually started when they were five or six. I started when I was nine. And then violin, I actually asked to start the violin. I didn't start until sixth grade, which definitely is super late for violin. And then even drawing, I wanted to take professional drawing lessons for years and years, but my parents thought it was too frivolous. And they finally gave in when I was in high school, when I was 14, and they regretted not doing it earlier. So I had very few really like these where my parents would drive me to extracurricular activities, like really very few. I didn't have summer camps. My parents took me to China and dropped me off for 3 months at a time with my family. And they like, bye, and left me. That was my enrichment, you know?
But still, that was enriching though, right?
Yes, yes. It very, very. I say that flippantly, but it was really, truly enriching. Some of the best memories of my childhood and shaped who I am.
Okay, wait, with the music stuff, did you continue it all the way through 12th grade? Did you like...
Yeah, but I wasn't one of those Asians, if that's what you're asking. Like the really good Asian? No, that's not me. Carnegie Hall, like one of our classmates, we know who we're thinking of. But no. I was like, you know, I think what I would say is that I had some modicum of natural talent, but I was lazy and I didn't practice that much. And also I started very late. So I don't want to give myself excuses, but I was fine. It was fine. Let's just say those things didn't really help me get into Harvard. Okay. If any of you guys are like,
okay,
I was like a very average musician.
Okay. So you weren't like, I was first chair for my county or something.
I mean, I won some county prizes for my drawings in high school.
I want to see these drawings one day. Okay. So did you ever have one of those moments like in the Joy Luck Club where the daughter doesn't want to play piano anymore and then she just like stops and messes up and the mom's like really mad at her? Like, did you feel a lot of pressure from your parents to be the best?
Not for that stuff. For academics, for sure, from my dad. But for the extracurricular stuff, weirdly enough, they kind of just, I don't know if it was because of ignorance, right? Because they grew up during the Cultural Revolution. They didn't have any extracurricular enrichment. I mean, their extracurricular enrichment for my mom was hauling loads of poop, like manure in the countryside. But no, I think my parents just didn't know. Like, they're just like, just study. All they knew was like studying academically, right? For the other stuff, they never gave me really any pressure. So the people don't believe me when I tell them that I asked for piano lessons and I asked for violin lessons. Like, wow. No joke. They didn't force me to either start or continue.
And did you ever feel any pressure where it was like, well, we're giving you these lessons, like we're paying for it. Was there anything or it's like she wanted it? We're at a place where now we can give it to her and then that's it. Like you didn't feel it either.
I didn't have teachers who were like, you know, my first violin teacher was a high school student who was really excellent. She was like a state level champion or whatever. My parents always found cheap ways to give me lessons. You know what I mean? I liked it. So they were like, okay, well, she likes it. And so I don't think it was a lot of cost to them. And it wasn't like today where they were busy shuttling me back and forth to all my activities and they were like tapped out. You know, none of that. I had like a couple lessons a week and that's it. It's just very straightforward, very simple, very, very different from maybe how some of our other Asian American peers experienced their enrichment.
Got it. So no sports.
I mean, I played like tennis, JV tennis in high school for a year, but that's been like, I just stayed after school. That's nothing special.
Okay.
Just, it's all generic stuff.
All right. All right. And then you applied to Harvard, you got great grades, but what were the things that you touted as your extracurriculars that were of significance to make you stand out?
I did a lot of community service that I myself initiated, right? But it didn't require like my parents to pay for stuff. Like I did a lot of stuff related to the school. I did actually all 4 years, I was a candy striper. Remember those at the hospital? Because I wanted to be a doctor. Oh yeah. So I guess they did send me to the hospital so I could volunteer 4 hours a week. What I'm saying is that it's interesting because all of it was initiated by me. None of it was initiated by my parents. And again, I don't know if it's because of ignorance or what it is, but I never really felt like they forced me to do extracurricular things. Academics, again, yes. But extracurricular, they were totally hands off.
Because that didn't happen in China.
And I also was in a beauty pageant. Did I tell you this?
What?
Wait, you've known me all this time and you didn't know my secret, guilty secret is that I was in a beauty pageant. I'll send you photos later. Or we can publish it on the
website. In high school?
Yeah. So there's this like Miss Teen. So it's not like Miss USA pageant, right? It's like this Miss Teen of Washington. It's like some other third party pageant that's not as prestigious, but they would have one in every state. And so I like had a chance to participate. It was like a scholarship prize. It was like the summer between my junior and senior years. But even that, I asked my parents. I was like, hey, can I participate? They're like, sure. But you got to raise your own funds, right? Because there's like a fee. So I went and solicited some local businesses, raised the money for my fee. It was funny because I showed up and there are all these girls who like spent all this time like doing their this, that. And I was just like, hey guys, what's up? Never participated in a pageant. Oh, I have this like Chinese traditional dress that I'm going to wear for my evening wear thing. And I got like third runner up.
Yeah.
I didn't only got a few hundred dollars. But anyway, my point is even that was like all initiated by me. I think my parents were amused and they thought it was like fun, but they didn't help me out. I think maybe they gave me some money. They just dropped me off at the pageant. I was like, see ya.
Of course it was a solo.
They didn't even come and watch it.
Well, I think we were there at the end. I think my mom came at the end.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They weren't like, oh, let's do your hair. Make you look so good. No, I did all that by myself. Yeah.
So the talent portion, did you do piano or violin?
No. So they didn't really have a specific talent part. They had where everybody was doing the dancing. And then there was like a, you know, interview part, which I feel like I totally excelled at. So maybe that was what gave me a boost, you know? And aside, I totally forgot about that until just now. I have a trophy, too, at home.
That big?
No, like maybe this big, like a foot or whatever.
Feel good about that, Kate, because I was also in a beauty pageant in high school called Junior
Mitts. Oh, yeah, that's a legit one. You were in a legit one.
Junior what? Junior Mitts?
Miss, M-I-S-S.
Junior Mitts. Okay, sorry.
Mitts is also something we should brand. Junior Mitts. Who is the sweetest of them all? Who is the
I didn't know that, Susan. You didn't tell us that.
You said your mom was into it, right? Didn't you say that? I remember at one point you were sharing that your mom had you and your sister enrolled in a
modeling school. Yeah, because there was a modeling school above our nail salon. And so we trade her acrylic fills for like different classes and stuff. And oh my God, I found one of my headshots the other day where I'm like, it's just so ugly.
We're going to have to post this on social. Susan, you know this for our episode drop. Please send it to me.
You can definitely have access to these photos. But anyway, so there's a group exercise dance number. And the song is... Do you know that song?
Sounds kind of familiar. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those... Every time I hear that song in adulthood, I remember I lost... Really bad. My talent was why we all should do public service. A speech by Susan. Like, it was so not going to make me win. But anyways, I get triggered every time I hear that song because I really wanted the scholarship money. That's the only reason why I did it.
Now we can move on to you, Susan, about your activities.
Modeling class. Junior Miss, not Mids.
Okay, so extracurriculars was involved a lot of begging. And so I really wanted to be in Girl Scouts because I really wanted to be the top cookie seller. And my mom and dad were like, no, you can't. But my sister got to do it for a few years. So then they're like, fine. And I got every freaking badge. Like they had to talk to me that I was making the other girls feel bad. And I was like, that's about their choices. I'm 9 years old.
I'm sorry. So Girl Scouts talked to you saying that you were making other people feel bad because you got too many badges.
Yeah. And you know what? I was the only Asian girl in the whole.
That's so racist.
If I only knew to pull the race card then where I was like,
oh my God.
Just because they don't have grit doesn't mean it's about me. Anyways, I did that for a few years. It was fun, but then it was whatever. And then I really wanted to be in band because had this crush on this guy named Sean who played the trombone. I wanted to have a chance to sit next to him like once a week. My mom said no. That was really devastating. And then when I was in sixth grade, I really wanted to be on the school volleyball team because all my friends were doing it. The popular kids were doing it. And that was a really sore point between me and my mom because that was when she said I couldn't try out. I told her that I hated her. And then that was the last day I ever talked to her because she went in for plastic surgery that day and never came out. And then I got on the team and I was like, okay at it. But it was like this weird thing where I knew she didn't approve because basically the real story is she probably didn't want to pay $20 for the uniform, for the long sleeve jersey shirt. It was like we were penny pinching. We had these nail salons. She had a lot of mouths to feed. But she was also like using money for plastic surgery. So it's a very strange situation now as an adult to learn more information. Mm. So anyways, I ended up playing volleyball. And then in middle school, I wanted to continue on the volleyball team, but I didn't get in. So I raised a Title IX concern because I counted the number of sports of girls versus boys. And then I advocated that I could be on the wrestling team so I could hang out with boys I had crushes on. I worked out really hard. It's a lot of conditioning to be on a wrestling team. I sprained my arm twice.
Like how you use Title IX, though, so that you could be with the boys that you had crushes on. There's just a certain amount of.
I know. This is like Gunner.
No, but also Title IX is like. Yeah. Anyways, go on. Working the system.
I was boy crazy.
Yeah.
But also, I like sports. I wanted to not be at home. And then I did like track and field. I did a lot of community service stuff. And anytime I ever wanted to do something, so like in ninth grade, the summer before 10th grade or something, I wanted to go to Central America for like 3 weeks and do community service and build this like library resource center and whatever. And my dad was like, hell no, we don't have any money. And then so I applied for a scholarship, got like half the money, begged him, said I would work at the nail salon. It was just like anything I ever wanted, I had to find the money for, beg a lot, and then endure just like a lot of criticism because my dad saw extracurriculars, community service, student government stuff that I would do as a distraction from school and being disobedient by not listening to him because he came from communist Vietnam during the Vietnam War. And like to get in, it's all about high marks, right? It's like perfection. And then maybe you get a slot. And so I would constantly go to the registrar's office in middle and high school, have them print out my ranking number, and then I'd give it to him. And I'd be like, I'm still number one. And then he still would be mad at me. And sometimes I would make him give rides. And then I would ask people for rides. And like the adult advisor, I'd ask for rides. And then finally he was like, I'm giving you a car because I'm tired of driving you. I found rides most of the time, but he just, that was one of the reasons why he's just so tired of it. He gave me a lot of rides when I had to get my teeth straightened for braces. And so that's when I interacted with my dad more when he was shuttling me around. But my point here is there was nothing that was ever like, oh, you're good at this? Let me give you all these choices or a summer camp intensive or whatever. Like I was fighting for getting out of the house, like doing something else because my enrichment was the summer after my mom died, I started working in sixth grade, volunteering at the local library branch. And so after I was done shelving, which was like pretty easy, then I would go in the back room and I would, any of the torn covers off of the picture books or anything, I would cut off all the plastic Mylar and I would redo it and seal it up and all the covers were clean again. And so there was like dozens of books and I would just sit there in the back by myself and do that. I always found ways to like get out of the house. And so what I was doing
was somebody asking you to do this?
I mean, it was a volunteer program.
Okay.
But you couldn't do it until seventh grade. And I was like, no, let me do it. And like, I forced my way into the library. I was just so hungry. I think part of it is have interaction with like adult advisors that would praise me.
Well, yeah. And then I think you were sharing that, you know, after your mom passed, it was like tough at home. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like there was an aspect of it where maybe you wanted to spend more time outside your house.
Yeah. I mean, it was more interesting. It was either stay at home and do homework, go to the nail salon and help out, or other. And so I tried to create what that other was. And I would try to like tell my dad, like, I got all these awards. I got these City Hall awards. Like I got into prestigious schools. And it was just such a different time for him, I think, in terms of he was in high school until ninth grade in a very rural area in the Mekong Delta. They didn't have extracurriculars. They didn't know that this is like how the American college system works. And so it was this very strange thing to want so bad to do extracurriculars that most like white parents would be so happy their kid wants to do. But it just be tainted with so much judgment of being disobedient. So it was always very confusing, but I really did like being around the adult advisors because I felt valued. I felt encouraged and praised, and I was hungry for that. So that's my extracurricular journey. How about you, Jeanette?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this as I've been shuttling my son from different extracurricular activities because now he's in kindergarten. It's like, how did my parents do this? So yeah, I think for me, I actually had a pretty good range of extracurricular stuff like growing up. I remember even before coming to the U.S., my mom somehow managed to get me some piano lessons. My mom had basically no financial means with my dad living in the U.S. and her living in Korea with my brother and I. But I think that's a different story how she probably managed to fund that. But anyway, she did. And then after we moved to the U.S., I continued piano lessons for a few years. And then I think I kind of like lost interest. And then my parents like didn't really push me. I think that also coincided with a period when my parents' financial life was getting even more stressful. And what other extracurriculars, like Korean school on Saturdays for a couple of years. I don't know if that counts as an extracurricular. Church was a big extracurricular. So just going to church for many years of my childhood, like all day Sunday was like at church.
You also then go to vacation Bible school, like during spring and summertime.
Yeah. So I would be like in VBS, but later on when I was in middle school and high school, I would also help lead VBS. And I took art lessons from a Korean lady for probably like a year. And then I actually got diagnosed for scoliosis when I was maybe like in fourth grade. Scoliosis, for those who might not know, is a curvature in your spine. And mine was somewhere between moderate and severe. I was actually a borderline case for surgery, which is like a fairly invasive surgery. Wow. It involves opening up your spine and attaching a metal rod to your spine. It becomes part of your body for the rest of your life. What I ended up getting is a body brace, which is like a hard plastic casing that is removable, but it goes around from below your chest all the way down to your pelvis. And so I had to wear that under my clothes for a couple of years, most of middle school. But the other thing that kind of pushed my parents to do is then they took me to ballet class and swimming because those are good for posture and just strengthening like your abdominals and your back muscles. So my brother and I both swam first at like a Korean swim club, but then later on at a JCC, like a Jewish community center. And we actually swam competitively for 2 years. This was in middle school, so nothing too serious. And then I also ended up taking ballet class for a couple of years. And ballet, I actually continued when I went off to high school. So in high school, you know, I went to a residential boarding school near Boston, and we all had to pick one sport. That was like part of the curriculum. Everybody had to pick a sport that they did after school. So mine was ballet. And so I continued dancing both ballet and modern throughout high school. And then I continued that, not like so seriously, but I continued that into college. It's kind of my main physical activity for a lot of years. And in high school, I did a lot of community service. So I was volunteering at a nursing home, and I also taught ESL class. I also was involved in this publication called Mix It Up, which was like a minority perspective oriented alternative to the main school newspaper. Yeah, so those are the things that I did. But I would say my main focus was the core academics. And as far as like my parents, they never pressured me, I think, in one way or the other to keep on going if I didn't want to do something, except for swimming. I did remember one time we had a very scary swimming coach. I remember my mom basically dragging us out of the car because we didn't want to go in. He was the kind of swim teacher who literally would push you into the deep end and you had to like paddle, doggy paddle for 20 minutes. That's how he taught you to swim. But other than that, I think my parents were very supportive that they actually encouraged us to try new things and paid for it, I think, as they could. Like I mentioned in previous episodes, my parents were not very well off, but they made room in their finances for this, I think, as much as they could. And also shuttled us from place to place. I think my parents were just not overall like that academically oriented. And my dad was pretty musical. He led the worship team at the church that my family went to. There was like a time before he got married where he considered being a professional singer. it's kind of weird that they had a kid like me who was like super academic. But I think that the other way it showed up is that they were pretty understanding, I think, and supportive of these other interests. Because I think in their own lives, they weren't that academic. My dad had this interest in music. So I think they were like open to us developing other skills outside of school.
I mean, it sounds like on the most part, it's different levels of parental involvement and suggestion. But in a way, it sounds like actually all three parents were pretty hands off in terms of no pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yours was like negative pressure.
It was so confusing. Oh my God, I write about it in memoir. All right. So this is the background of what we are bringing to the table as parents of our experience. We all have kids now ranging in different ages of 3 to 5.
1.5.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay. I've got the youngest one and Jeanette's got the oldest one.
Right. Mom brain. Okay. So how are you looking at enrichment programs for your kids? Like art. Okay.
Yeah, you go.
Let me grab it in. Real story. He really likes playing fake hockey at home.
What's fake hockey?
Oh, it's Canadian roots.
He'll be like, oh my God, right now I'm going to get this random wrapping paper roll. Okay. And that's a cardboard roll. And I'm going to put some trash together, put it in a net, make a puck, and then make a goal. And we're going to start playing hockey right now. And I'm like sitting there on my phone looking up being like, wait, you want me to do what? So then we start playing hockey for a little bit. Then he wants to play baseball with this same like wrapping paper stick. Then we're playing soccer all over the kitchen. I'm like, okay, this guy's into sports. Cool. We do T-ball in the backyard. I sign him up for T-ball at the Y. He wants to just play with the rocks in the dirt. And I'm like, wait, what? I thought we've got so much momentum here. He was getting so much confidence. He's very good at physical contact with things and like hand-eye coordination in a way I am not. He's definitely got Marvin's genes on that. But then all of a sudden I sign him up and then he just do not care. He makes me run the bases with him. I'm the only adult doing this age 3 to 5. T-ball thing, all the adults are like sitting with their like camping chairs on their phone. And I'm like, I'm doing all the exercises with art. And I'm like sitting here going like, what is happening? Like he won't do it without me. Then he starts to hate going. He cries. He doesn't when it's T-ball day. And then I'm sitting here being like, I thought I was doing something nice. I was encouraging him. I got the YMCA discount and now he just hates going. And now really, we only like showed up 4 times out of 8 times and I'm pretty pissed. I'm sitting here going like, I'm trying to support you, bro. I don't know when to keep encouraging or just saying, no, you wanted this or did I want this for you? I don't know who wanted it. All I just know is you had aptitude and that was cool. So I was going to give it to you. I feel kind of mean. I feel like I'm forcing him. Mm. But then what about, oh, it's about sticking with it. We signed up. We're going to finish all the way. He's 3. Like, at what age do you, like, make them finish a thing that they requested slash?
They don't even remember. Yeah.
That's such a good question, Susan. This is very apropos.
It's really confusing for me. And I'm just like, Art, you didn't have to forge my signature.
Can I just, I will say, Susan, I feel like, okay, I'm going to say something a little bit hardier, okay?
Oh,
which
no.
Which is listening to you, I do feel like I'm hearing the echoes of your parents' dynamic with you. Like, it's not playing out in the same way, but the emotions are still there. Okay, this is just my read of it, okay? I mean, obviously, take it with a big grain of salt. But the cost, like, stress or that being a big consideration, so you paid for it, why aren't you doing it? I just think that from, like, a 3-year-old's perspective, he doesn't know any of this, right? You do know that, right? He doesn't know any of it. Like, showing up to a new activity, it sounds like it's something that he may really enjoy. All the new people looking at him, the roles, the coaches. It's sometimes a lot for a 3-year-old to just dive into. And if he's feeling like a certain pressure from you, even if it's something that he enjoys, he may just start feeling like he actually doesn't want to do it because of those other things. So I'm just reflecting a little bit back to you that I feel you're bringing more into the situation.
But it's not uncommon. I'm going to, I agree with you, Jeanette. And I'm going to say, Susan, your question about like, how do you know when to stop? When has it become a lesson to start? This is like the golden question. I feel like we actually asked the same question of a friend who's a listener of our podcast who has older kids recently. And his answer was, I don't know. No one knows. Gosh, I have so many thoughts. Okay. I guess the best way to answer and to segue is to give an example of my own, which is that you name it, Raya has probably tried it in a class form since she was 1.5. I think we were trying to overcompensate because COVID, she literally didn't leave the house. We went to 3 different swim schools. She's had toddler gymnastics. She's had Chinese dance. We've tried out a Mommy and Me dance class. We've had music. What is it?
Together.
Music together. We've tried out a trial class for an outdoor Chinese immersion program. She's now enrolled in a judo tots program. Anyway, LTLDR it for you guys, because I'm practicing this for Leela, my younger one. Everything before 3 is just really optional and for socialization. Like, my conclusion after all this is that, okay, people don't take it as a judgment. It's just what I've concluded for myself. Honestly, I feel like at a young age, the most important thing, if the parents can stomach it, is just to play with your kids. Because when you were saying, Susan, about art, he just loved imagining playing hockey or these things at home with you. I think part of that, it's not just like he likes hockey or he likes whatever, baseball. I think he likes hanging out with his parents because he's well attached to you guys. It's like a natural, he's in his own home. He's in a comfortable environment. Kids love imagining things. And I think for us as parents, it's not a blame thing, Susan. I do exactly the same. That's how I know how you're feeling. I'm just like, my mind immediately goes to, ooh, should I cultivate this talent with a formal class? The reality of it is, Nerv and I have shuttled Raya to a number of classes. F this. I want my life back. I don't want to be sitting for 30, 40, 60 minutes waiting for my kid to finish a class or sitting in a class with my kid for 30 to 60 minutes, half of which they're just sitting on the side, not wanting to participate. And I feel like, oh, why am I here? This is really annoying. Resentment started building because I felt like she takes a long time to warm up, which, as Jeanette says, is totally normal. It's like a new thing. And these are COVID kids. But then I start feeling resentful because it looks embarrassing. Everybody else's kid is participating. Why is my kid the only one sitting on the sidelines? And then at 30 to 60 minutes, what can you do? Even if it's a drop-off class, what do you do as a parent? I guess you could go grocery shopping at Trader Joe's, but more often Nerv is just like literally derping on his phone. And to me, now that we've done it, I'm like, waste of time. You know what we're doing this year? Raya has one class on Wednesdays. It's judo. And the reason why we picked judo is because Nerv believes in martial arts. He thinks it's good for discipline. And also, it's a 2 to 5-year-old class, so that in half a year, when Leela turns 2, they can be in the same class and we only have to make one trip. I think something that people don't think about is how the parents' mental health, their schedule, their life fits into this whole thing you want for your kid, right? Like, what do you really get out of it for your kids? Is it the achievement of your dreams? You're maybe cultivating a future talent. Maybe, but let's be honest, most of us are not going to have kids who are like Bobby Fischer or LeBron James.
That attitude, Kate.
Okay, sorry. Yes, I know. Susan, I knew you were going to say, not with that attitude. I mean, at this age, my lesson now is that it's more about me understanding where my desires are coming from as a parent, right? Is it like the projection of my own desires? Is the discomfort coming from me? As opposed to, we're actually thinking about how uncomfortable our children might be in this new setting and how do we guide them? And also our expectations. I think approaching a toddler class, it should be less, I want my kid to learn this skill and more, oh, this is a new environment and a new thing for my kid. How do I guide them through this process? The outcome isn't they should learn a new skill or a new talent, but the outcome should be, how do I work with my child to get them adjusted to something new, right? Yeah. But it took me so long to realize that. And I don't know, we're basically just following Raya because she's been really into her Indian side lately. We used to take her this Chinese dance lesson, which, by the way, she would do it for an hour just to get a lollipop at the end, which is why now I will no longer enroll her in any classes that use bribery, because she's willing to, imagine this, sit through an hour of a dance class she doesn't even like to get a friggin' lollipop. Okay. So anyway, she started seeing all these Indian girls standing next door and she's like really into it. She asked me to play Indian music. And so recently I asked her, like, hey, you want to learn how to do Indian dance? We showed her some videos. She's like, yes. And I was like, there's no lollipop. Do you still want to do it? She's like, yes. So we're working on that now. We're trying to find her an Indian dance teacher.
Oh, yeah. It's like the true test.
Yes. My distilled wisdom is, is she willing to take a class without a lollipop or any kind of bribery at the end? If she is, then it is a true interest. But she's 3.5. So I feel like it took me a while to get there, you know, and every kid is different.
Yeah. Yeah. I also feel like it's kind of about exposure too, right? Like understanding, oh, there is this thing that people do together called Chinese dance or t-ball or gymnastics or whatever it is. Just knowing that this thing is out there. I don't know. That's at least what I tell myself. It's just, he knows that it's there. And if he decides later on that he remembers that thing, he's interested in it, he knows that it's there. It's an option, right? But I hear you. It can be kind of frustrating when your kid is acting very differently or not to expected behavior, like in the thing. It can be stressful.
I had Art do some like swim lessons where it was like me and him in the water, just loving it. He was like loving it. Great. I signed up for the next class where I sit on the sides and he sits in the pool and then he's with the instructor with other kids. He would cling to my leg. Like he wouldn't even sit near the edge. It just became like so much work.
Yeah.
To prepare him mentally, to talk him through. Maybe I would sit next to him. And it was just so agonizing that I was just like, I'm done. And so we just stopped going. And yes, I was hung up about the money. But part of me was like, okay, he's not ready for this. Or maybe my anxiety. I don't know how to swim now. So I want to expose him to stuff I didn't have. Okay, go for it, Kate.
I was going to say, I went through the exact same thing, right? I was totally fine with me in the water. And then I tried to, can you believe this? I shelled out $70 for a half hour private lesson. That's their going rate, by the way, in Bellevue at the pool. The Bellevue is near where we live. Yes. And you know what she did the entire time? Scream. The teacher told me, disappear. Don't come into the water. I literally was in the other room where you can see through the glass. I could hear her screaming. So I basically paid $70 to hear my daughter scream for half an hour. I will admit it. I was embarrassed. But really, I realized I made it all about me because I was embarrassed that somehow my daughter wasn't ready to be separated from me because so many others of her exact same age peers were, right? And I think that is the bugaboo as parents, especially when we are growing up and our parents always compared us to their kids, which is a lot of Asian parents do, right? And so I realized that she's just not ready, period. Is that good or bad? It's not neither good nor bad. It's just where she is, right? Same thing with Art. He just wasn't ready to part with you. That's fine. And I think after that, the lesson I took is that I need to wait for her to be ready, one. Two, I need to wait for myself to be okay with her not being ready. If she's not ready, she's not ready. But I can't stress out about it. And if I'm stressing out, it means I'm comparing her to something or someone. Because why else would I stress out?
You think this is about T-ball? No, it's about your subconscious, your trauma, and your past.
It's true. And I will admit, we have friends whose kids, they listen to the parents. They love getting into the water at this age. They're already swimming at this age. And I'm just like, my daughter doesn't know how to swim. She doesn't even want to get into the water without me. And you can spiral so easily. Do you see this?
Yeah. What are your kids doing? Like, how are you so even keeled about this?
I don't know how I'm going to feel in the future. I think I might feel a little bit differently, especially regarding to school. But I think as far as extracurriculars are concerned, I think it's both a reflection from growing up, but then also like the extracurriculars that I grew up with, the role they play in my life now. Having gone to Harvard, like you see so many of our classmates were so well accomplished in things outside of core academics, right? And some of them, those things aren't really a big part of their lives anymore. And so it gives me some perspective, right? I still really love dance and I feel like it's a great outlet for me. It's a great creative expression. It also taught me a lot about just being in more touch with my body and how that works. So it's added a lot to my life, but it didn't help me get a job. It didn't help me get into a school really. So the way that I view extracurriculars is unless my kid does display some outsized interest or natural talent, it's really for their enrichment. It's optional, right? It's something that I hope will just add to their personal lives later on. So I guess that's why I don't really feel like that stressed about it. Like he does gymnastics. I would say in the beginning, like he skipped half the things. He would just pretend they weren't there. Like he would pretend like the rings weren't there and he would just run across and he would jump off. And he did that probably for a year and a half. And there were plenty of other kids his age or even younger who are like swinging wildly on the rings. But now he does them and he's very proficient at it. He's made so much growth and progress in gymnastics. I'm really proud of him. And I also feel like it's built his confidence in that I wasn't able to do that thing, but now I can do it because he's been doing it for 3 years now. I mean, I actually don't even want him to be like a professional gymnast. That's not the outcome that I would desire for him, but it's more just him getting comfortable and exploring like different physical abilities. So I think that's how I see it in terms of the role that these programs should play. I do want to say that now that he's in kindergarten, I do feel like there's a different dimension to it because you do have that block of time like after school ends and before dinner time. That time is just there, right? When you're in daycare, usually if you're in full-time daycare, as most of our kids are, you know, your kid's there until 4 or 5. So if you bring them home and you like relax a little bit and you eat dinner and you go to sleep. But once they enter elementary school, there is that block of time and a lot of kids are doing like other things. So it becomes more of this question, what are you going to do with that time? And I think that the other dimension of it that becomes different is that at 5 or 6, they are much more ready to like understand and actually build skills. And so I do feel like there is a little bit more of that sense of, oh, I think pre-5, I'm more okay with just saying, okay, this is about exposure, no pressure, just try it out, get comfortable, know that this is there. I think at 5, you start feeling a little bit more, okay, we're at piano class. Sometimes there's homework or practice afterwards. So there's all this question of how do you manage that? If he doesn't want to do it, what are you going to do? I do think that, again, after you start elementary school, I'm just previewing it for you guys. After you start elementary school, I do think that the dynamics become a little bit different. And it's something that I'm like wrestling with now because, believe it or not, like in the greater Seattle area, you will find different enrichment classes for 5 and 6-year-olds that like end at 8:30 at night.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is beyond Tumon.
Yeah, all kinds of things. All kinds of classes for kindergartners, like academic enrichment classes, Russian math.
I learned there's a thing called Shanghai math from my neighbor yesterday. Both her grandkids are in it.
Oh, okay. Shanghai math, arts programs, music programs, theater programs, martial arts. All these things are available for your kid to do late at night. Jake and I have been having the conversation of how much is too much. How do we make decisions about how much and what to do for him?
What the answer is?
I think last night we had a conversation about how, for me, it's very important that Isaiah gets enough sleep. I would err on the side of him getting too much sleep, like having too much time a little bit for sleeping than too little time, especially at his age. I just don't think that that's like the foundation. So I don't want to compromise on him getting enough sleep. So that's one constraint. And if he says that he doesn't want to do something, I usually try to ask him to do at least a couple more before he makes his final decision. If he consistently says, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, then I'm not going to continue to push him for months and months. But if he tells me, I don't want to go to class today, then I will tell him, I already paid for this class. We already told the teacher that you're coming. So unless there's something seriously wrong, there's something bad happening in class, and you tell me. But if it's not, then I need you to go to class, and then we're going to go 2 more classes. And if you still don't want to do it, then we can maybe stop. So that's the approach that I've taken, which is I'm not going to just immediately respond right before class. He says he doesn't want to go. I say, okay. And it's a gray zone. It's a big gray zone. I don't want to respond to his immediate demands, but I'm not going to continue to push him to do something that he clearly hates, unless it's school. He has to do school. No. But fortunately, he's loving kindergarten, so that's good.
I've noticed, you know, I've been getting a lot of warnings from parents of older kids, like kindergarten and above, about how, oh, your life is going to be so hard once they start going to elementary school, because then they have to do all these activities. Like, multiple parents were bitching about how they have to drive their son or daughter to a swim meet. Like, they have to drive 2 to 3 hours to the middle of nowhere in Washington for their son to like swim 2 minutes in a swim meet. They're like, that's your future. You know how like parents of older kids like to haze you, because they'll be like, see, you're going to go through that too. I've gotten so many warnings. So it's just really interesting, because like I mentioned earlier, my parents were very laissez-faire about my own extracurriculars and definitely did not compromise their quality time by shuttling me back and forth to a plethora of different activities.
Blissful ignorance.
Yeah, blissful ignorance, but they didn't have hangups around that, right? But now I'm getting all these messages of, you better prepare. Otherwise, you're going to end up like many hours in the car. And I'm seeing it. Like when you said, Jeanette, like extracurricular activities for 5 to 6-year-olds until 8:30. There is someone I know who I regularly see that her son is eating dinners in the car in the bento box. He's 6, 5 and a half, 6, because after school, he's going to these activities. And I have very mixed feelings about these quote unquote warnings from parents of older kids, and then seeing some of these choices that people are making. Because, how do I say this? On one hand, yes, if let's say hypothetically, if my daughters found something that they really loved and they really wanted to get into, like swimming, would I drive 2 to 3 hours so that they could race in a meet because they wanted to, right? Not because I'm forcing them. I mean, I would, right? But on the other hand, this like part of me is like, I want my own pet. I'll drive 2 to 3 hours in a car with them. But then a third voice is, yeah, but that's also bonding time with your child, because you can talk for 2 to 3 hours. But then there's another parent warning that's, oh, when they get to that age, they don't want to talk to you. They're just going to be on their phones or like watching an iPad. So then my mind starts spiraling and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do.
Oh my gosh.
My kid is not even that age yet, but I'm just getting all these warnings from people.
What about carpooling? You know what I mean? Can't we just carpool?
Yes, you could. That's like a solution. But I guess I'm just taking a step back. And shouldn't we maybe begin by thinking about the family as a unit and the lifestyle that we want as a family, including our kids as they get older? Right.
Yeah.
Because I think what happens is that people make decisions on a singular basis. They say, okay, my kid is doing this activity. Then they start taking the kid to that activity. Then they're just making a separate decision about another kid's activity or the same kid's other activity. And then I think this is when chaos can ensue, because then it's hard to take a step back once you're in the throes of it all to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I don't want our family, my kids to be eating dinner in the car like 5 times a week. I don't want XYZ. This is kind of what I think Nirav and I did. We kind of had to do a reset because I felt like we were just like trying all these activities. I was getting a little frustrated and we hate being in the car. Already we spend an hour dropping off and picking up our kids every day because their school is farther out. And so he and I really had to have a discussion about this. What do we want our life to look like? Do we want to make it so hard for us as parents already when they're 1.5 and 3.5? And our conclusion was no. So we have no weekend activities. We have this one judo class, which we skipped 2 weeks in a row for legitimate reasons, by the way. Not because Raya didn't want to go. 1 week, my mom was here and she wanted to spend extra time because she's going to China. And this past week, they both had their flu shots and they were screaming their heads off right before. So I was like, I can't take. So I'm just much more chill now because I think I finally had a grasp on the lifestyle that I want our family to have when the kids are this age and where it won't trigger me to be so frustrated. Also, just quality time together as a family, right? I think I really had to take a step back and ask myself, what is the bigger picture? What do I want? And then make decisions based on that. But I think oftentimes the decision-making starts from the, which activity should I do? As opposed to how do we want our life to be as a family? Sorry, that's my big soapbox that I've been trying to say for so long.
Yeah, no, I think that totally makes sense. I think that you should just also not underestimate them. Maybe I shouldn't put it like that. For me, I think just having downtime and feeling like I know that my kids feel like they have enough family time is important to me.
Yes.
And actually, we had to have this like big discussion because my husband wanted to sign up Isaiah to a Saturday morning class. And I was like, I don't want that because I want us to have the flexibility to do different things on Saturdays. But Isaiah went to the introductory class. He absolutely loved it. He asked me when he was going to go back 5 times. So then I was like, okay, we'll make it work, right? You can do it for this semester. So I totally agree with you, Kate. I think it just serves nobody if the parents are so stressed out and then it strains everything. But you have to make that balance, right? But sometimes there's not necessarily a really clear line. All these difficult decisions, it's good to have these guiding principles. I think that's very important. But even with those guiding principles, sometimes the decision's not necessarily clear cut.
And then you have to touch base because kids change, right?
Yeah,
your
exactly.
Lifestyle changes. The pace of life changes. It's like a huddle. Like every quarter, Nirav and I like reassess our life. And is this going the right way? Because every Sunday, by the way, we hire a babysitter to come and watch both girls. So he and I can have 3 to 4 hours of, we basically do our seat, like family meeting, the two of us. We review our finances, our plans, how things are going, blah, 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 blah. And should we continue these activities? It's, you know how you would in a business.
Yeah.
Let's do a strategy meeting. Every Sunday is our financial review, our strategy meeting, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized when we weren't doing those regularly, he and I would just get into all these fights and then we'd make these decisions in a vacuum, including around these activities. And I think it can get really hard because I think at this point when there's so much complexity, you really got to run a little bit like you got to have some of these corporate-y, I hate to say corporate-y, but like elements of, you know.
You need structure because when you're trying to have a conversation, you get interrupted all the time and then it's never a complete conversation. And then it just eats up so much mind space and then there's never conclusion. It's terrible. I want to say after the whole T-ball, and at the same time, I thought it was a great idea to have overlapping sports. So there's this thing called sports sampler. So like at the Y, they also do track and field one day. So Art was like running over these tiny hurdles. But like,
oh my gosh, that's so cute.
We're cute. And then they do basketball another week. Anyways, we only made it to 2 out of 7 because we're just traveling. So there was 1 week where we had T-ball and sports sampler in 1 week. And I was just like, all the energy around prepping Art that we're going to go do it today and all this stuff and the transitioning and the needing the snack beforehand. Otherwise, he's going to die and like he doesn't eat the snack that fast. So then we're like late. What we did is we enrolled into preschool. So he's been going there for 2 weeks now. they had this like soccer class during preschool time that you can sign up for as an add-on. It's twice the price of the YMCA class, but it's during school.
Yes.
And I drop him off and I don't have to put the jersey on because I just give it to them. And if he wears it, I don't care. I don't care. And we go to this gym that has daycare, like it has care. So I drop him off and I work out and I feel like I'm cheating. I feel like I have my parent, my self life back because I'm like, I can take a yoga class. He's there. There's a bouncy house. There's like all these like books. It's great. And so maybe he sees it now as enrichment because
he doesn't see it as enrichment because he doesn't know what enrichment is.
Yeah, whatever. But the point is Marvin and I, we don't do these.
He's not checked the enrichment box on my parent criteria.
Yes, I wish he did. I wish it was easier that way, but I wish it was that straightforward. I wish parenting was that straightforward. Fed, pooped, great. And everyone's, I'm green on everything. See ya. And I'll be like, bye, good night. Anyways, but the point is Marvin and I were like, wow, we're working a lot. We need to work out. Otherwise, things start to crumble. Like self-care is like going down the drain. And so now it's great. Let's make sure we go to the gym. I was like, is it every Wednesday? Like, when are we going to have family time? But it's really gym time for me and Marvin to work out, but Art's safe and he's fine. So that's where we landed, which is we're trying to do maximize convenience right now. Mm-hmm. Because I'm starting to travel a little bit. He's traveling a little bit for work. To have your kid during the COVID times and you have so much focus time with your kid and like no distractions, no FOMO at all. And then now it's just, I feel like the wave has happened where I just feel like everything's so scheduled again. And then I'm just like, how do I make this easier for everybody and increase, like optimize family satisfaction, right, whatever. So that's where we're at right now, which is we're tired. And then this is the most frictionless solution. But I'm just curious, and I want you to be super honest with me. Is there any part of you that's like watching what your kid wants and wanting to expose them to that so that they get more time at being better at it, so that it will distinguish them so that they have a higher chance of getting into a tier one school? There's a part of me that wants Art to find his thing faster, so that he has a higher leg up in the process. Like if he has aptitude for something, I want to cultivate that. I do have that feeling inside of me where I'm like, I want to give you an advantage if I can give that to you.
So yeah, maybe we should have a whole episode on this because
yeah,
all of us in many ways have had non-traditional paths, right? And thinking about my experiences, like I had a full ride scholarship to a very prestigious boarding school. And then I did all the academic things. I have these peers and I see them now like nearing midlife, how all of those things have played out. I almost fear to say this out loud on our podcast because I could see how I feel now and how I actually feel when my kids are older. It might be different, right? But I think like I want them to find their passion, but it's not necessarily in the service of getting into the top 10 schools, let's say. There is a part of me that, let's say, I want them to get into a good school because I feel like that is an indication that they have the basic academic skills that I feel like is important just for life skills, having an intellectual engagement with the world. So that is important to me. But some of the cost of being pushed too hard too fast is you don't have a good sense of yourself. And then I think what often happens is then you have to take a circuitous route back. And I've also seen people at McKinsey or at other places who didn't graduate from Harvard, who graduated from, let's say, a top 50 school or a top 20, top 30 school. And they are doing great. So I think my takeaway from this is, would I be like opposed to them going to a very highly selective school? No, but I feel like I want to take a little bit of a longer view than that, which is there are many gold medals in life, like many, 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 right? And Harvard kind of funnels you into thinking there's only five gold medals and everybody's going after those five gold medals. And if you aren't pursuing those five gold medals, you are feeling bad. Whereas maybe having good math skills, good literacy skills, good comprehension skills, like an intellectual engagement with the world and ability to think for yourself and knowing what your interests are, I think in the long run will get you more success, even in conventional terms, and will lead to a more satisfying life. So that's kind of how I think about it. I do want my kids to know what it means to work hard and to like grit through hard times, but as of now, I'm not really looking at it with a lens of I really want them to be like super good at this thing because it's going to help them get into X school.
Plus one to everything Jeanette said, and I will even take it one step farther, representing my husband's views on this matter. I'm not quite there really with his views, but basically he thinks that college is optional for our kids in the future. This, by the way, coming from someone who spent, he did his 4-year degree in 3 years and then med school and then training and all this. And the reason I think why he says this is because, like Jeanette was saying, there are many gold medals in life. And I think he and I have had circuitous careers where we've encountered so many interesting, talented, smart, successful people who have come from totally not our conventional path, which is AKA like Harvard and then whatever after, and who are, I hesitate to use the word successful necessarily in the classic way, but who are doing some really cool stuff and really like what they're doing and are very good at it. And I think especially for Nirav, because he's in the startup world, like he's mentoring right now this 18, 19-year-old boy who's not going to college, has already had one successful AI startup exit and is doing another. Yes, he is 19. Correct.
Oh, my God.
So when Nirav sees things like that, he was like, that could be our daughters one day. And I would, if they were this committed, they were this smart, and like they could do this without going to college, he was like, I would support them. Right. For me, I still feel like I kind of want them to go to college because I think, like Jeanette, like I want them to have a base, a foundation in certain like academic skills and so forth. But I also admit that by the time our kids go to college, which is in, I don't know, 15, 13 years, things could look so different. Right. And so I think, like Jeanette, Nirav and I wanted to see beyond just the outcome of them getting into a top, I don't know, 10 school. We want to think of the skills that they need for life, which is, I think, flexibility, adaptability, grit, also working hard. But I think things are changing so quickly now that I feel like actually this whole idea of like flexibility is so much more important to our kids than it was even to us. But the thing is, there's no map for that kind of outcome. There is a map for how to get into a top 10 school if you want your kids to go, in a sense, right? Even that doesn't offer guarantees, but there's a safety in it. Whereas sometimes I think how we're thinking about it, I approve and I like it, but I feel questions and doubts sometimes because it's a less clear path, in a sense, because you have to rely less on external markers of this is what you should do and more on understanding of your child, leaning into yourself and your own mental health and how you're parenting. Does that make sense? I think I'm touching upon a lot of big topics here. It's harder in a sense, but I feel like the outcome could be healthier.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I like to think of that.
I don't want to open up another big topic right now, but I think one question for you, Susan, is, you know, you're in this art space, right? You wrote a book. It took you a while to get back to this place, right? Which I think was like always in you, this performative storytelling, like yes, connecting with people. Let's say you had the support to pursue that earlier on, but it led you down a path that didn't go through Harvard. Okay.
Right.
And you just felt that all the external pressure like that you had to face and still face, right, to just be mentally like strong in the path that you're going. It's just like a thought experiment, right? Which one is better? I'm not saying Harvard is bad. Harvard offers many benefits, right?
And why does it always sound like we're shitting on Harvard?
No, yeah, I know, but I am not. I'm deeply appreciative and I have many friends, including you guys, relationships that I value, including my husband, all of which came from that school. But I think that there is like this like kind of, and I don't think Harvard as an institution has necessarily said this. It's not really the institution's fault, but I think collectively as a society, we've just become so obsessed and the focal point has narrowed so much that it's like out of touch with what is actually reality. The reality is that there are many successful people out there who didn't go through this kind of more well-marked, milestoned path. And if that path means that my kids are doing work that they love more and they get to start it earlier, I think that's great. But that does require me to be okay with it, which is hard. I think it's going to be hard because if I'm not okay with it, they are probably less likely to be okay with it. And yeah, if they don't believe in it, then they're not going to go that way or they're less likely or they'll feel more conflicted. Yeah, anyway, whole other episode, probably topic, but just an interesting thought experiment.
I'm a non-traditional artist, friends. I'm not trained in theater. I did a one-woman show, 10-city national tour. I don't have an FFA in creative writing. I wrote a memoir. yeah, what would it look like if I had formal training? And there's also a part of me that is really grateful for the path that I took because I don't have the attachment to how to do it in those ways. In theater, you have to like wait to be programmed by an artistic director. Then your show arrives in a place like 2 or 3 years later, 1 to 3 years later. I see people following the traditional path and not making it. You know what I mean? And that because of going to Harvard and going to get my MBA at Yale, which was lots of loans, I have these amazing networks and people who are helping me along the way and opening up doors for me. So if I had gone straight to art school without connecting to other industries, it's different. I just did it the way I did it in this lifetime. And what I carry with me is wanting it better for my kid instead of having to fight all these internal demons that I fight all the time with my work. I want him to have less baggage around that. Yes, I want to be careful about the pressure that I give to him. But I don't know. There's such something around courage and ambition and taking initiative. And I want him to have all those things too and be the least damaged possible.
Yeah. Isn't that the crux of our second generation Asian American thing, is that we got here because our parents didn't have that much. So we had grit and we went through all this trauma and we worked really hard in the classically successful way. And then now that we have our own kids, we want the good stuff that we got, which is the grit, the determination, pushing it through. But then we also want our kids to be emotionally healthy and do the things they love and feel like we support them. This is everything we talk about in our podcast.
You think this is about T-ball? You thought wrong. All right, friends, always a wonderful conversation. Last insight thought I want to wrap up with. We have been just talking about motivating our kids and getting them to do what they want. Sometimes we need to get them to do what we want. And that most common thing is for them to put on their shoes and socks and get out the
effing door.
Yes. No, come on. We are running late, or we got to make it to this party or whatever, go to school. So I'm curious, when they are not listening to you, what do you do? How do you get the show on the road? What are you saying to them? What I do with Art is, because he knows how to put on his shoes and socks, he's fine. I put these stickers inside his shoes and I cut them in half. That's how you know the left side from the right side, because you put the two shoes.
I need that.
I saw it on
Instagram. So smart.
Okay. Anyway, so he can do it himself. He's taking his sweet ass time. And you know what I say? Ma is going to leave the house right now. I'd love for you to come with me. Bye. And it's walking out the door.
But it works?
Yeah, it usually works. Especially if no one else is home. He's okay. I guess that's where we're going, right? Because you're also the center of energy, the force of things, right, in the house. So that's what I do. What else do you guys do? I'd love to have some tips, other tricks.
Sometimes I just repeat the direction. I'm just like, Isaiah, put on your shoes. And then he's like still doing something. I'm like, Isaiah, put on your shoes. Isaiah, put on your shoes.
Oh my gosh, I just had an idea. Jeanette, you should record yourself saying that and then just have it play automatic on your phone until he comes.
I don't know if it'll work so well if it was recorded, but I just repeat it. I try not to be harsh about it, but I just say, hey, Isaiah, I asked you to put on your shoes. I see that you still haven't put them on, so please put on your shoes. I also try to give him encouragement. Like whenever it's something definitely I'm working on, because I'm just not naturally inclined that way, because culturally, positive reinforcement is not really something that my parents used or anybody in my parent circle used. But whenever I see him doing something that I want him to do, I really try to take a moment and just recognize him to encourage that behavior. But sometimes it's just, repeated instruction, try to keep it kind, gentle, but firm. And the other thing that I have been using is just like more carrots and sticks. So I'll say, not in the morning, but like maybe like in the afternoon, because that's for whatever reason, I'm like more okay with giving them like sweet things in the afternoon. I've been doing it with more like vegetables, right? So if you guys want mango, what I say is if you guys want mangoes for dessert, you need to eat this whole green bean. Like it needs to go into your mouth and it needs to go down your throat into your tummy, okay? Because mangoes, if you want dessert, you need to eat at least one piece of vegetable. That's like an example of a carrot. A stick is like going out the door. If it's like really taking forever, I start telling them I'm going to reduce TV time. I'm like, okay, if I see you dilly-dallying, and I try to give like a good reason. I say, if we're late for school, that means everything else in our schedule is being pushed back. And then so something has to be less. So that is going to be TV time. So you guys usually get two stories, but if I don't see you guys putting on your shoes and on your jackets on and in the car, we're only going to watch one today. And that usually gets them going because they really like their TV time.
Jeanette's approach is the right one. We need to do that, basically announce it ahead of time, because basically what happened today was an epic effing crap show. I ended up screaming, which is always the last. Every mom has done this. So I don't think anybody should feel ashamed about it. It's happened. We prepared. Don't worry. But usually I do a mix of everything that you guys have said. And now that there are two sibling dynamics, I know you should never compare. But what I do is I don't compare. What I say is if one of them is doing the thing correctly, I'm like, oh, I lavishly praise that person. But I don't say, hey, look at that. Look at your sister. I try not to do that. I'll just be like, oh, Raya, what a good job you're doing. You're putting on your shoes. Or if Leela's headed out the door, I'll be like, oh, wow, Leela, good job. You're headed out the door. Great. Let's go together. Raya's very FOMO driven. So if everybody's doing something else and she's not, she like usually comes over. That's like ideally. But let's be honest, we've all lost our shit at the kids and yelled at them to get out the effing door. I do think I will take a leaf out of Jeanette's book to try to like lay these conditions out, I think, when everybody is calm. So I told Nerv we need to call a family meeting and say, hey, when mama asks you to do something nicely 3-4 times, putting on your shoes and getting out the door or cleaning up after your toys, if that doesn't happen, unfortunately, there will be consequences. Because I think slowly at this age, Raya is going to be 4 soon. Like, I do believe that she should start understanding that there are consequences to not wanting to clean up and making your mama clean up after all your shit. I don't want to do that anymore. You're almost 4. You got to start taking on some of this family responsibility. Sorry.
Wow. I was like, my other tip. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm like, sounds so mean. I count down. I'm like, 5.
That's not mean.
I do that.
I do that.
Mean. And then I go, 3.
The train's going to leave. Really
yeah.
Things happen. Things move along.
Train's going to leave. That's what I say. It works.
Sometimes I think it's helpful to them because they actually cannot think like that far in advance. Yeah. So having a very short-term timeline is actually helpful.
Yes. Timers. Yes. Oh, I forgot to mention timers. For some reason, Raya always obeys the timer on my phone. It's weird, but she does.
Yes. I also use timers. I'm like, okay, if they're fighting with toys, I'll just say, okay, this kid can have it for 2 minutes here. I'm setting a timer. We have a Google Assistant, so I'll just tell Google to set a timer for 2 minutes.
Good one.
And then when the thing rings, yeah, it's like weird because when the thing rings, then they're like, okay, handing the toy over to the other kid.
It's weird. Yeah, it is very weird.
They're like, God has told me.
Praise. All right. And that is the end of our episode of Too Enriched. Thanks, everybody.
We hope you found something helpful, reassuring, or interesting in this episode of Model Minority Moms. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us spread the word by texting a friend about our show or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, please visit our website at modelminoritymoms.com or follow us on Instagram, where we love receiving messages from our listeners.